He missed the metaphor. It's actually going to be football instead of baseball. But that's okay. That's all right. He didn't know, and that's all right. You know what? I forgot to get the pointer. No, I've got it in my other pocket. Okay. I hope this sermon's not going to be like that. I hope. All right. Have you ever played the game Bible Trivia? In reality, there's really nothing trivial about the Bible, and yet there are many little-known facts and characters in the Bible. Here's a test question for you Bible trivia fans. Do you recognize the names of these men, and what do they have in common? Shemua, Shaphath, Igal, Palti, Gadiel, Gadi, Amiel, Sethur, Nabai, and Guel. I know that you know right offhand exactly who those men are. Well, I'll give you a hint. They were all losers. I'll give you another hint. They didn't see eye to eye with Joshua and Caleb. And that's right. Certainly, these were the men who were the 10 spies who did not agree with Joshua and Caleb about going into the promised land. I meant to mention also, for those of you who take notes, I messed up on the thing on the back of the bulletin. The outline should say, every time it says Joshua, it should say Numbers. So I was thinking too much about Joshua when I made that out and emailed it. But these 12 spies were sent out to spy out the land of Canaan. And certainly it was a land that was going to be the promised land. It was the promised land. And there were these men who said, well, we can't overtake these people. We can't go into the promised land, even though God had instructed them to go, and even though God had promised them that he would be with them. And as a result of their negativism, as a result of their failure to obey God, the Israelites were sentenced to wander in the wilderness for 40 years, 1 year for each day the 12 spies scouted the land of Canaan, and that's in Numbers chapter 14, verse 34. None of these 10 negative spies were permitted to enter into the promised land. They died as a result of their unbelief by the hand of God. And all the adults, all those who were 20 years of age and over, they died in the wilderness, except for Joshua and Caleb. God raised up a new generation to invade and possess the promised land. This is an exciting time of the year for football fans. If you're not a fan of football, it may not be an exciting time of the year for you. Professional teams, college teams, high school football, they're all in full swing. And every coach and every team will begin the season statistically even. They're all winners before the season starts. But certainly, by the end of the season, there will be relatively few teams who will be in the playoffs. And eventually, there will only be one team in each division who will be the winner of that division. And even those of us who are diehard Cowboy fans have that glimmering hope that maybe they will once again become America's team as they once were. But at the end of the season, there will be few winning teams. I think that's a good analogy when we look at what happened with Joshua and Caleb and the other 10 spies. Many teams will get relatively close, but relatively few will win the big games. I have a rather lengthy reading for you this morning. It is from the book of Numbers, beginning in chapter 13, beginning in verse 17. Numbers 13, verse 17. When Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan, he said to them, "Go up there into the Negev, then go up into the hill country. See what the land is like, and whether the people who live in it are strong or weak, whether they are few or many. How is the land in which they live? Is it good or bad? And how are the cities in which they live? Are they like open camps or with fortifications? How is the land? Is it fat or lean? Are there trees in it or not? Make an effort then to get some of the fruit of the land." Now the time was the time of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob at Lebo Hamath. Now you think these names are easy to pronounce, yeah. When they had gone up into the Negev, they came to Hebron, where Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were. Now, Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and from there they cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two men, with some of the pomegranates and the figs. And that place was called the Valley of Eshcol because of the cluster which the sons of Israel cut down from there. When they returned from spying out the land, at the end of 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told him and said, "We went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit." Nevertheless, always watch when someone said nevertheless or but, "the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone in spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. There also we saw the Nephilim. The sons of Anak are part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight, and so we were in their sight." You can be assured that every team has an extensive scouting report on its opponent. They know what the offensive and defensive tendencies are in certain given situations. They know every player's strengths and weaknesses. They know what tendencies their opponent has when they line up in a particular formation. And each team's scouting report is for the purpose of keeping surprises to a minimum. The Lord told Moses to send out a scouting team to spy the land of Canaan. And a leader from each of the 12 tribes of Israel was chosen to make up that scouting team. And they were charged with some specific directions, as we read a few moments ago. They were to determine the opponent's strengths and weaknesses. How many of them are there? Do they live in open camps or behind fortified walls? Is the land productive or barren? And for 40 days, they scouted every detail possible. And they brought back a sample of the produce of the land. And it took two strong, healthy men to carry a cluster of grapes on a pole. This is something I want you to notice. All 12 men saw the same things. All 12 men agreed it was a land that flowed with milk and honey. So you have to ask, how could those 12 men scout the same opponent and then develop such an opposite game plan? Can you imagine what a head coach would say if his assistant coaches came from a scouting assignment with ideas that were so diametrically opposed? The scriptures specifically state that Caleb was a man who had a different spirit and follows me fully. So Joshua and Caleb both tried to convince the people that God would give them the victory, even as he had promised them. They said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it. We shall surely overcome it," again in chapter 13, verse 30. Joshua and Caleb knew what God had said, and they not only knew what God had said and the promises that he had made, but they believed in God. And they believed in the power of God. He assured them that the land was excellent. The Lord was prepared to give it to them. In chapter 14, verses 7 and 8, "The land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us. Land which flows with milk and honey." But the other 10 scouts had a dissenting view. The 10 who at first agreed that Canaan was a land flowing with milk and honey ultimately gave a bad report about the land. "The land through which we have gone and spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size." Their game plan was this: don't show up for the game. Can you imagine? Even with the promises that God had given them, they didn't want to go into the land. In fact, we're told that they grumbled. And we're told that they said, "Well, why didn't God just let us die when we were in Egypt? Or why didn't God just let us die when we were in the wilderness?" You know what else they said? In chapter 14 and verse 4, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. After all the beatings and the bad treatment that they had received in Egypt, and here they were right at the brink of the promised land, and they're saying, let's go back to Egypt. Undoubtedly, they had a short memory. They couldn't remember how bad it was there. And they couldn't believe it was going to be as good as God had told them in the promised land. And so because of their cowardice, the 10 scouts who gave a negative report to the people were struck with a plague before the Lord and died. Chapter 14, verse 37. So what makes the difference between a winning and losing mentality? Well, I think, first of all, is does the team or does the group have fear or do they have faith? When the 10 saw the huge size of their opponent, they were intimidated. And yet there are many smaller, lighter teams who have defeated taller and heavier teams. Many underdogs have won because they were faster and smarter and more determined than their opponent. The 10 lost the battle before it was ever begun. They did not have confidence in themselves and certainly did not have confidence in their God. They didn't have the faith of David when he confronted Goliath the giant. But Joshua and Caleb had a different spirit from the other 10. They had the spirit of Paul who wrote, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Got ahead of myself, I'm sorry. Joshua and Caleb had faith in the power of God to conquer all of their opponents, whether large or small. And we need to have that confidence too. God has told us that He'll be with us, that He'll protect us, that He'll guide us, that He'll keep us. And yet so often we live as timid people. People who are afraid to speak up. People who are afraid to contend earnestly for the faith, as we talked about this morning in Bible class. And there's also a difference between pessimism and optimism. Listen to the vocabulary of the 10. We can't. They are stronger than we are. We seemed like grasshoppers. They are of great size, but, and that was their excuse. Not only did they say that the people of the land saw them as grasshoppers, but more importantly, it says that they saw themselves as grasshoppers. Too small, too inefficient to carry out the will of God. Anytime a person's world revolves around himself rather than around God, he will be a pessimist. In contrast, listen to the vocabulary of the two, Joshua and Caleb. We can certainly do it. If the Lord is pleased with us, He will lead us into that land. Do not rebel against the Lord. The Lord is with us. You see the difference in the attitudes? And I wonder this morning, how many of us have the attitude of an optimist? And how many of us have the attitude of a pessimist? And we all ought to have an attitude of an optimist because God is on our side. And God has already won the victory. And all we have to do is be on his team and fight for him. Thirdly, mentality of grumbling or praying. As a result of the discouragement of the ten, the sons of Israel began to grumble against Moses and Aaron. And even when Joshua and Caleb wept because of their disbelief and because of their grumbling, they prayed for the people. And they prayed for them even though they had picked up stones and were ready to stone them to death. And yet it says that the glory of the Lord appeared and undoubtedly stopped their plan. In chapter 14, verse 10 and also verse 21 and 22, as I live, all the earth will be filled with glory of the Lord. Verse 18, God is abundant in loving kindness. These two men could pray for their opponents, but their opponents would soon die by the hand of God because of their disbelief. There's a great deal of difference between the people who live by faith and those who live in fear. And I hope and pray that each one of us is living by faith. Faith in God. Faith in God's Son, Jesus Christ. Faith that they will carry out their promises. When you think of them when they did go into the land of Canaan, even though God had wanted to destroy all the people, Joshua and Caleb intervened and asked the Lord not to kill them, but that another generation was going to come up to go into the land. And almost every battle that they fought, they won. Every battle that they fought with the power of God, they did win. There were some battles they lost because they were doing it on their own merit instead of the power of God. Do we have faith? Are we willing to stand up as the army of God? Are we willing to be people who know the truth and will express the truth to others? We have Friends Day coming up in 2 weeks. Will we invite friends? Will we encourage them to come and fellowship with us, to worship with us? Will we invite them to come and hear the message that God has for them and for us? Will we be people of faith? Or will we be people of fear? Are you optimistic in the power and the willingness of God to work in your life? Do you spend much of your time grumbling to men or praying to God? I hope it's the latter. I hope that we're constantly praying to God, that we'll grow closer to God, that he will open doors for us to invite people, that there may be people who are saved because of your invitation to come and to hear the message of Jesus Christ. Do you have faith? Or do you have fear? If there's anyone here this morning who needs to respond to the invitation of our Lord Jesus Christ, won't you come while we stand and while we sing?